Hello, everybody, and welcome to the China Tech Investor Podcast, powered by TechNotes, seeking truth from facts when it comes to Chinese tech stocks and IPOs. I am your host, Elliot Zagman, and with me is my co-host, the co-host who is not being accused of malicious slander. It's James Hull. Yeah, maybe.
Does that mean one of us is? Okay, so I'll do our disclaimer real quick. Nothing said on this podcast should be construed as investment advice or a solicitation of services. Even our numbers may be incorrect or off. Investing is risky. Speak with your financial advisor and do your own research,
and of course,
before making investment
decisions. Be sure to
decisions.
Go to technode.com/newsletters to subscribe to all the great newsletters that TechNode has available. They are your central node when it comes to all the latest and greatest information in China tech. We're going to cover a lot of stuff today. We're going to look at JD.com and everything that's going on with them. Alibaba, we're going to look at iQIYI's lousy stock price. We're going to talk about Tencent and how they're bouncing back with the game approvals being back. But first, it is not every week that one of our hosts is involved with the China tech news of the week. So that's what we got going on this week. I'll give a little bit of a background. It's a complicated story. So my Chinese publisher is being sued, or at least the lawsuit was announced by ByteDance. We've talked about before, the world's most valuable startup at $75 billion, for something that I wrote that they are saying is malicious slander. I do not agree with that characterization. And also they have not, my publisher, from what I understand, has not received any kind of documents or any kind of they have not been served with documents actually saying that the lawsuit has happened. But it was reported by TMT Post, ByteDance has said that the words that I have used are quote unquote malicious slander. But we'll get into that. So what happened was last week Monday. So that is, let me see the date. That was the 17th. I woke up here in the United States with a message from my editor who was like, bad news, we're being sued. And he sent me a link from published by TMT Post that said that ByteDance was suing my publisher Huxiu for something that they had said in an article that was translated into Chinese from what I had written in English. Now, TechNode had also published that same article, but they had taken some of my more choice, more incendiary, more colorful language, I think is what John Hartman would say, out of it. Now, everything that I write, when I do write, I am not a straight up journalist or reporter. I like to add my own commentary, which is, you know, some editors like it, some editors don't. Now, usually what happens when I send to TechNode is that they might keep a little bit of it, but they do remove some of it, right? Which is totally fine. I have no problem with that. John and Colin are very professional. And they decided to remove some of my more colorful characterization. Huxiu kept it in. Now, what the article was about ByteDance's, their local Indian language platform called Hello. And Hello, what they do is they publish content in local Indian languages, right? Like Hindi or Tamil. And the people who are using these apps are usually people who are relatively new to the internet. So there are people in either, you know, third, fourth, fifth tier Indian cities or in the Indian countryside who are just getting a smartphone for the first time. Maybe their English is not very good, so they're using the local language apps instead. Now, what we're finding is that a lot of these apps are filled with fake news, right? And and fake news that, even if it's not fake, is very divisive. So we know that, you know, in India, it's a very, you know, diverse culture, diverse country that has a lot of, that has struggled, you know, in the past and continues to struggle with tensions around around religion, right? So we'll see, especially in the Hindi language content, a lot of content that can be quite, that plays on divisions between Muslims and Hindus, and many of it is fake news. So it's data like 90% of the rapes in India are committed by Muslims, or you know, false quotes that that politicians say, or that kind of controversial politicians say, that they didn't really say. Now, many of the people who are using these apps, they are just getting online for the first time. They don't have the ability to kind of discern between fake and real news. They're not very well educated. They're not very, very, you know, internet literate. And we're seeing that this kind of content is starting to have some negative effects. The content is often being shared. There's an option to share it via WhatsApp, from these apps, both Hello and Xiaomi Invested Share Chat. And they will, they get circulated on WhatsApp. And what we've seen this year is we've seen a number of kind of gang lynchings by Hindus going after Muslims. So I think that, you know, it's very hard to identify direct causation, but I think it's fair to say that, you know, as these apps have become more popular in India, we're seeing more religious, or, you know, religious violence that's happening there. And a lot of it, if you look at what ByteDance's apps do, they have algorithms, and they're designed to stoke the to get the most traffic, to drive engagement. So what drives engagement? It's anger, right? We've seen this with Facebook, but I would say that with Facebook, they can claim naivete, that they didn't know what they were doing. And I think that if you look at the reporting on what has happened in with them, that they really didn't know, even though there's plenty of negative press that they are rightfully getting. But I think ByteDance does know. they're seeing what happened to Facebook, and they're doubling down on this kind of these divisive news apps, and they're going after these groups and these countries and these population demographics that I think are most vulnerable to this kind of thing. And then also, I don't think that they, Facebook also offers a social component that these news apps do not. So, you know, if we did not have Facebook, I think that would be, you know, some people would say that the world would be a better place, but I don't think it would be. But I don't really see what benefit these news apps give. And ByteDance has received a very, very high valuation, and I think that they're trying to justify that valuation. And I think that in trying to do that, I think that they're causing some problems. And I don't think that it's malicious or slanderous to say those kind of things. So now I'll tell you what I did write. And it might be some strong words, but I don't.
Wait, what? What was your response when
I was like,
the editor told you this? Like, what were you feeling, thinking, well, and then what did you want to do?
Well, first of all, what they accused my editor of doing was adding that language themselves, that they had translated it from the original TechNode piece, and that they had removed, or that they had added some of that content, and that it was not my words, but it was Husio's own words. Now what I did was I sent out a message and said, these are my own words. And once I said these were my own words, then that article that announced that lawsuit went down. I don't know what they're planning on doing at this moment. I don't think they obviously don't have a case, because it is my own words.
I mean, it's kind of my interpretation, kind of from their side, is it's kind of PR handbook 101. You know, get the bad press, bury it somehow, or get it taken down, and try to move along.
Yeah,
because it is sort of, I mean, it's negative press for them. And, you know, if you're trying to do an IPO or raise capital, right, it's tough. So this is all presumably searchable, findable, you know, information and commentary on the internet.
And I think that a lot of people are questioning that $75 billion valuation that they have, including myself. I think that, you know, if they're probably going to IPO next year. And if you're looking at all these other companies, whether it's Xiaomi, whether it's Meituan Dianping, these other high market cap, high valuation, IPOs that have happened from Chinese tech companies this year, they have been disappointing. And I think that ByteDance probably looks at this and says that there's a possibility that this could happen with them as well. And if you're an investor in them who's bought in on that $75 billion valuation, that's a you know, you're betting a lot on that. And I think you're going to be worried. But I do think that they have bigger fish to fry, obviously. And I do wonder also about, I think a bigger issue that they have is, I don't know how, I think that they may be gaming their growth numbers. This is at least their international growth numbers. I think that they're very popular in China. I think if you're riding the subway, you see everyone's using Douyin, or Jinri Toutiao.
Yeah, I mean, you see people, you get in an elevator where there's people are watching Douyin just in the elevator on like a little 10-second trip down. You know, it's enough time to fire up Douyin and like watch one or two funny videos.
Yeah. So I can see why it's very popular in China. If you look at what they're citing, they're saying that, okay, they're the number one downloaded app or the number one downloaded social app in the US right now. If you go on Twitter or Instagram or YouTube, there are ads constantly for TikTok. Like they're clearly putting a lot of money into an ad spend on the major social media platforms in the US. And
that might be a good reason to look at Google and Facebook. You know, they're getting extra revenue from all those VC money that went into ByteDance.
Well, I joked on Twitter, I said, you know, with all this money that this Chinese company is spending on American, you know, American social media platforms, you know, we're going to get that trade deficit evened out real quick. so they, but I, so it seems, so if you, aver, you if they I mean they raised in their most recent funding round, which was in October, November, they raised $3 billion and then they raised another $1.5 billion in debt financing from a bunch of big Wall Street banks. So if they have that much cash on hand, like they're pouring it into their expansion, and they're spending a good amount of that, one on promoted posts and ads on these popular platforms, and they're doing it. They're paying, you know, influencers like Kourtney Kardashian to get involved.
What'd she talk about? The oceans?
Yeah. They're doing this holiday like charity drive, where they don't really clarify it. So if you join TikTok or produce content, they'll donate to a charity or something like that. But Kourtney Kardashian said that the charity she was picking was this ocean conservancy, and she says on the post, "For a better future for our sushi." So, anyways, but that's
the dead fish that is going to be on our plate.
Exactly. But anyways, that's beside the point.
So we have sushi. Maybe that would have been a better
right.
one.
Anyways, but that's beside the point. So, but if you're spending enough, if you're spending enough, you're going to get that number one download. Because if you're filling the popular media apps with your ads, you're going to get a lot of downloads. You can buy enough downloads, right?
Well, you gotta have an app that's like decent. I mean, it can't be like a total piece of junk. They download it, and then it's like, oh no, don't download that. It's a total piece of junk, you know?
Well,
So it's got to be like at least well made, up to par, sort of, at like programmed and user experience and all that has to be at least okay, and then the content's got to be somewhat,
not it just for a download though. It just means
catchy.
the ad has to be good.
Yeah, I mean, don't, otherwise they're just gonna get a really, people will start complaining about it, and there'll be less, you know, people will become more sort of aware of like, oh, that app sucks, you know,
Well,
you see more of that out there.
Google, I mean Google, the feedback that people post online about it, I think that you're starting to see that. But
Oh yeah.
yeah,
Hope those VCs did some Google searches.
but you, so I think that they can, if they put enough money into their ad spend, they can get enough downloads. Secondly, the number that they will often cite is their monthly active users. So for both Top Buzz, which is their news
Is
app,
a flawed number.
yeah, and TikTok, I have them both on my phone, and I get inundated with push notifications. So, I mean, if I look at kind of, you know how when you're, I have an Android phone, but when you look at the phone and it's the screen is dark, it'll have these notifications of if you get like a WeChat message or if you get an Instagram message
Yeah.
or, it's always the notification more often than not is either the Top Buzz logo or the TikTok logo. They keep sending push notifications. And so if you click once on these push notifications, even accidentally, you're going to be a monthly
Oh, you
active
pick up your
user.
phone, you unlock it or tap the thing and then unlock it, then you're in the app and boom, you're a monthly active user
Exactly. So,
for half a second.
but when I go, but go around, like I in like they're promoting themselves pretty big in pretty heavily in Southeast Asia. So I would go to like there's a university near my house in Bangkok, and I would go to a Starbucks near the university. So it's all these kids in their university clothes, right? So people, between 18 and 22 years old. And I go up to them and I say, what apps do you use? Do you use short video apps? Many of them, they're like, oh, I use Instagram. I love Instagram stories. I say, do you use TikTok? They say, I don't use TikTok. I say, do you know what it is? They say, yes. How do you know? Advertisements. Right, so
Yeah.
there. I mean, I could be. I've done the same thing here in the U.S. I could be missing out on the demographics. Maybe they're younger, right? Musically, which they acquired, they tended to their key demographics were 12, 13, 14-year-old kids. So maybe I'm just not talking to young enough people. That could be it. But it doesn't seem like they're actually getting the user traction. And it would make sense that they would have such popularity inside China and have trouble getting it outside China, particularly because inside of China, they don't have Instagram and they don't have Instagram stories. So if you're going to do a short video or something like that, everyone's doing it on Instagram stories in the US now
Right.
or in most of the world. So
Well,
I.
supposedly Tencent's WeChat is doing stories now, or they're getting ready to launch it. I don't know if it's rolled out to everybody yet, but they are doing something.
Which I think could be cool. I think
Yeah.
it's they're way sure their short video app has kind of flopped, but I think the stories might be a good way to kind of use to get in on some of that action. But I do think I would, I am just a guy with an opinion, right? I say I'm a blog boy, right? So don't. Do your own research on these guys. This is my opinion. I have a right to an opinion, at least in America, I have a right to an opinion. And so if people disagree with me, then they can disagree, but I'd say do the research yourself. I smell a lot of fishy stuff with this company, and I think that there's a lot of evidence to back it up, both when it comes to the social responsibility and when it comes to kind of the validity of their user claims. And but I should go into more about my background with them though. I wrote my first article about them about a year ago when I last fall I was asked by somebody who was involved with their English language app to repost some of my content, like some of the articles I had written for other outlets, onto their platform. The way that you do it, I mean, it's similar to something like a, you post videos to Douyin, or you post a video to YouTube or something like that, just because they're trying to get creators on the platform.
They
So
want
I post,
content.
yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not you're not you don't work for the company. You just they're just they just say, hey, do you want to join our platform? Sure. So I tried to do a couple of them. I didn't really like it because I didn't like how they turned all the headlines into kind of clickbait, right? Like, can you believe that? Blah 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 blah, right? And I so I it made me feel dirty, and I didn't like it, so I stopped doing it. But I kept the app on my phone, and I got more. I kept getting notifications, those push notifications, and I started noticing that those push notifications were fake news. So I don't know if you remember that special election that happened in Alabama, like a year ago.
Oh, Roy Moore or
Yeah,
whatever was one of the guys. Yeah.
Doug Jones and Roy Moore. So Doug Jones was a
Doug Jones,
Democrat,
Roy
Roy
Moore.
Moore was a Republican, and he
Yeah.
was accused of kind of like basically statutory rape.
Right, right.
And Doug Jones won, and the notification that I got was Roy Moore wins Alabama election, or Alabama Senate election. But
Lovely. That's pretty
yeah.
far off.
So, but if you look at how so if they're incentivizing, they paid per click for these content creators. So if they're paying per click, then it's going to make sense to run the opposite headline, to run the Dewey defeats Truman headline, right?
Because then
The
people are like, wait, what? And then they click it.
exactly.
Ryan Holiday has a whole book about kind of this type of stuff. And it's like the sales, the crappy news, sales, kind of advertising gimmicks that you can do, where you hear a rumor, you write a post about it, it gets clicks because it's like, oh, what is that? This is super interesting. And then you write another post about how, about the real thing, the real truth. And then you write a third post about how you were duped into believing the fake rumor. So you got three stories
Ha!
out of nothing. And then and you get clicks on all of them because you make interesting kind of shout headlines about it.
Yeah.
But that's the
Wow.
world we live in now. I mean, like you really have to be careful what you consume, and you can't. I mean, people who've been on the internet for a while probably know this, but you can't believe everything you read, right? Can't believe every push notification you get. I mean, even the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times send push notifications out that are wrong, that they have to kind
Yeah.
of backtrack. So it's like, it's not. It is a. Di it's a more difficult world, and the worst is when this like kind of the staff that's changing the titles make it grab your emotions. They make you, which
Yeah.
forces you to get angry, or and then when you get angry, you react. You want to forward this thing to all your friends. Oh my God, look at this. Ah, this is horrible. But
Yeah.
if it's something happy, maybe forward it to like your girlfriend or your wife. That's like one
Exactly.
person or maybe three. I don't know where you live.
Yeah.
But it's not it's not great if you're fighting for those clicks, but if you're fighting for if you have paid subscribers, then you can kind of have trust you. You know, you don't have to be the first to get the news out. That's kind of one thing. You can wait and get the right news out. Yeah,
exactly. And that, and I think that's why you see the more reputable news outlets say, okay, if we want to do news, we have to do subscriptions. The article that I wrote about a year ago was just about how, because I would notice how prevalent fake news was on this app. It was, you know, is NASA lying to us? The moon is 4 miles from Earth, right? Which is closer than a 747 flies. Or it's like secret alien base on the dark side of the moon. You know,
please tell me there's flat earther stuff on there too.
Oh yeah, there's tons of stuff like that. It was just full of garbage. I mean, full of not just divisive stuff, but just fake stuff. We don't need to talk about this anymore. Anyways, yeah. So that's just my take on the issues. I'm very happy with just want to clarify. I am very happy with everyone I work with at Technode and their decisions on the matter, and everyone at Husio as well. So just to clarify all that. But yeah, let's move on to talk about the watch list.
Okay, so let's move on to the watch list. First, before we do that, there's one big little, not super huge news, but maybe a sign of progress, maybe a positive thing for foreign businesses in China. China proposed prohibiting foreign technology transfers, at least at the local government level, which kind of implies that that's where the problem is. And they also are proposing to prohibit local governments from illegally restricting foreign businesses' market access. This is kind of a big deal. This is a proposal, so it still has to be codified and implemented and all that. So it's not final in any sense, but it seems like at least they're using the words technology transfer, and it seems like progress. I'm kind of excited, but I don't want to get too excited. You know, it's good. This is a good move.
This is my question about this.
Positive.
Is, like, first of all, forced technology transfer has always been, has never been a policy, an official policy in China, right?
I have no idea. I can understand if you're in a company and you're like, oh, if we can get some technology, then, we'll own some IP and, you know, there'll be some positive thing as the head of this company can go and tell some bank that might give me a bank loan or some local government official who might give me, you know, some subsidies or something. Like, there's some positive thing that could be gotten from it. I don't know if it's like a top down it seems more bottom up to me. But this kind of news made it sound like it was a local government sort of thing. What I've heard other people say about it is it's more a commercial phenomenon. But obviously, you know, the thing that kind of hit that shot itself in the foot with was the words made in China 2025. It sounds great as a domestic policy, but when you open the door and you start saying that outside, it sounds pretty bad.
I'm split you're gonna say like that a country can't develop their technology and their high-end manufacturing.
I think the concern is like, you know, there was a policy to develop the steel industry. There was a policy to develop the renewable energy solar panel industry, and those were pretty heavily subsidized, and it led to a drop in steel prices, a drop in solar panel prices, a drop, you know, and all these things. And it led to also overcapacity. And I think from one point of view is if they're going to let kind of state-driven, government subsidy-driven sort of into the tech industry, you're talking about, I mean, all the costs. I mean, it'll be horrible for those companies that are there. They got to draw a line, right? So they want to stop it. Massively cheaper technology, you know, AI, all this stuff. Maybe it's good. I don't know. But it's definitely bad for the companies that are involved in semiconductors. And so they got to, I mean, my kind of sort of, I mean, totally uninformed, do your own research opinion, is that maybe, you know, some of these companies pushed back a little bit and they're seeking to kind of, okay, we can't actually let this industry, these groups of industries be completely destroyed in a way, right? By massive state subsidies.
I think that the quotas that they had seemed to be the, I mean, when I was, I remember, you know, last spring when this stuff was, you know, before the quote unquote West really had a problem with it, just looking into it and being like, well, you know, if you're a high end manufacturer or a technology company in China, like, you know, it sounds like the entire system is being rigged against you, which, you know, that would worry me.
You mean a foreign one or a domestic one?
If you're a Japanese company or a German company or an American company doing business in China, you know, how can you ensure that it's fair practices when, you know, there's no real separation of powers, you know, there's no real, you know, rule of law to ensure that you get the same playing field as the Chinese company, and there's industrial policy to promote the Chinese company.
Well, I mean, the argument against this is that, you know, these were sort of commercial arrangements, and the companies did decide to do it, and they kind of did it, you know, I haven't talked to, you know, all these companies, but my guess is they kind of did it for market access, and market access didn't turn out as good as they had thought it would. And so they're kind of like, well, that's not a, you know, I did this, you know, you held some carrot here and I said yes, and the carrot keeps going away and I have to keep carrying the cart, you know? And so like, at some point it's like
Lucy
up
in the football with Charlie Brown. That's kind of, you know what I mean? Or like when you know that the trick when you pull up with somebody in a car, you're like, hey man, get in. And then once they're about to grab the door, you just move forward
a little bit. just a little bit. Yeah.
No. Anyway. Hopefully this will mean a healthier competitive environment for local and foreign companies. But yeah, let's move on to some of these watch list companies. What do you want to get at first?
Okay, so we can start with Alibaba. I mean, the bigger news is JD.
Let's start with them. Yeah.
So maybe we should go there. Yeah. So JD, what was it? Was last week? Was it Thursday? Yeah. Thursday. We're recording this the day after Christmas, 26th. Last week it was announced that Richard was not being prosecuted for alleged rape, and this JD share price shot up, but the next 2 days after that it went down, and it's down again today. So
it's down what, below down around 19,
short-lived 1989 right now, but kind of
it was up around 50 at the beginning of the year. That's crazy. Lost 60% of its value.
Yeah. I mean, there are funds out there that still own a lot of JD. A lot have been selling, but you know, anyway. Another thing JD announced is they announced a $1 billion share buyback, which is pretty huge. They should start. I mean, at this price, they should. You know, if they believe their stock is worth more, they should be buying it.
So what's the thinking behind doing a buyback like this? Especially if they're not making profit.
That's another. I mean, the reason you do share buybacks is you have extra cash that you're able to, you know, you don't have a better investment than your own stock, right? And usually that's, you know, I think Warren Buffett has some calculation he's said he uses, but it doesn't seem like he's actually sticking to it. But I think it's like when it gets down to, you know, 1.2 times book value, you know, they'll buy their shares or something like that. I mean, I don't remember exactly what he said. JD right now, by the way, is 3.1 times book value. But it is below IPO price. It's 19.9 roughly right now. I mean, they have a capital intensive sort of logistics thing going on. Is doing $1 billion of buyback the right decision?
I don't know, but why would they? Like, so what about, like, what's the, is it just that they would think, are they trying to reassure investors? Are they trying to, do they just think like, oh, it's our stock is low right now, so we might as well just buy into it because it's a good investment?
So that's one aspect. Another part of share buybacks, which is kind of more, you know, more financial engineering aspect of it, is you can, if you buy shares, you know, you have your price to earnings ratio, which uses your earnings per share, which is your net income divided by your outstanding shares. If you lower the denominator of that equation, the earnings per share of your PE goes up.
So it makes the stock
look
better.
If you buy, you can actually make your EPS go up while your earnings is going down. If you buy enough. So
that's interesting.
you can make your PE look better and more attractive. So then the other side of that is that if you buy a share of that stock, you get more earnings that you're owning. But anyway, some people really like, some funds really like stocks that buy a lot of their shares back. They call them cannibals, you know. They eat their own.
Well, it's kind of like shares. Having a dividend, except it's less regular. You know, like you can't rely on it as much, but it's a little extra bonus for owning. It's a little thank you for owning the stock.
Yeah, and it's not taxed. It's not a taxed event like dividends are.
Anyways, let's move on.
But ideally, when you have share buybacks, the stock price should be moving up. If you have share buybacks and the stock price is moving down, then they're not working.
Yeah, doesn't seem like they're working. So JD is in trouble, I think. They we'll see what happens with them. There's been speaking of JD, I think I've been hearing about some of their layoffs. We're seeing a lot of layoffs, I think. Meituan Dianping announced it. You know, you shared that with me and then I tweeted it out. But we saw I think it's almost across the board. Now in China, and I think in East Asia in general, I mean, no company likes admitting that they're laying off people.
Especially growth tech companies.
Yes. Yeah.
Because if you start saying, oh, we're laying off people, that's not growth.
Yes. Right. Right. But we're seeing it across the board with a lot of these companies. I'm hearing regularly from people that are actually in the companies or closely associated with them. A quarter to a third, somewhere around there for a lot of these companies. And which it makes sense. I mean, if you look at the valuations of these companies, you know, what was getting a company that was $5 billion, at the beginning of the year. It's now, a lot of them are getting valued around two. So you got to cut your workforce. It's not the bubble's burst, I think, for a lot of these companies. So, you got to cut them. So
what's funny is, like, my initial decision to fire people or not fire people wouldn't be based on valuation. If the company is making enough revenue and cash to support, right? So,
but if you're a tech startup,
if you're doing a 2VC startup type, then.
And a lot of these companies either just IPO'd or are about to. So, either if they just IPO'd or are about to, they gotta cut the fat, So that's what they're doing. So what you'll often hear is the line that I think is the line in China is they'll say, "Oh, we are cutting 10% or 15% as part of our forced ranking system," right? That you have to force out the bottom.
I've heard this too.
But they never, here's the thing, is that the companies are supposed to, they say, "Oh, we always do it. We're just doing it this year." Right. But they never bring up doing it unless they're actually cutting more people. Right.
Well, no, what I heard is that they usually do forced rank, whatever, 10%, underperforming for however long, they cut them. And then they usually replace with another 10 or maybe 12%, right? So it's a little growth. Now what I hear is there's no replace.
Mm.
It's just cutting. Yeah.
Right. But that's the line that you'll often hear. But then there's also a lot of other ways that they'll do this, is that they'll pressure them out in different ways. So, there are the people who they actually lay off, and then there are the people who they encourage to leave. There are the people who the boss just ignores, right? Until they leave, is it that kind of stuff is real common.
That's dirty HR stuff.
Yeah, but it's the kind of stuff that happens. Yeah. I think also in China there are so many laws around there's so many labor laws around
labor.
Yeah, exactly.
Tons.
In a lot of ways, like the white collar workers in China are protected more than a lot of Western countries.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
So so if you are HR, you got to make cuts. You can't just lay people off. You have to do, a lot of times you end up doing, some tactics that are, a little underhanded or,
So the big thing in China, if you signed two labor contracts and you sign your third, I think you have to be employee for life. So a way some firms get around this is they time the contracts. So like how long they think, they can kind of get, if you're signing 3 1-year contracts, that third 1-year contract is supposed to be a lifetime.
Really?
Employment.
Really?
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. But anyway, so what happens when you have lifetime employment, that means that you have to get paid certain severances. And actually, they're not even supposed to be able to fire you. They're supposed to, the first thing they're supposed to do is move you to another job, another position. Mm. But anyway, this is we could do a whole episode on that.
And if your ultimate goal is to get these people to leave, think about all the different things you're going to try to do. Right, you're gonna say, "Oh, we're not letting you go, but we are." Every time you get here, we keep moving your desk to the least favorable position, right? Or
have you seen the movie Office Space?
Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly. Yes, yeah. Right. So there's plenty of stuff they can do.
Then he blows up the place.
Yeah, I mean, and what it does is it makes it a very unpleasant place to be for these employees. Anyways, let's move on. What do you want to talk about next?
Tencent.
Okay.
This was also last week, and I think it was at a conference that someone announced that game approvals are back.
Yay!
Game approvals are back. That's kind of a big deal. But I don't know if it's like 100%. It seems like it's, I mean, 10 cents shot up on that day, and then it's kind of come back slightly. So I don't know.
But 10 cents, like they're in a time where like December, we've seen just these stocks just plummet again. 10 cents been holding steady over 300, and in October it was when they were, I think they were down to like 260 US, or not US, Hong Kong dollars per share,
Hong
and
Kong
now they're up
dollars, yeah.
like they've been hanging out over 300 pretty steadily. So yeah.
Yeah. Now we're back. I mean, if we go back this, before this drop this year, they were around 300 in, let's see,
They were
July
400. They were 400
of
something at the beginning of the year.
2017. Yeah, they got above 450. I mean, it's Hong Kong dollars here. Yeah, so this is anyway, I'm long 10 cent.
Yeah, we've talked about it. We're both long Tencent. But of course, make your own decisions. This is not investment advice. Okay, what about but speaking of companies that that have fallen in share price, ITE, man.
Oof.
Hui.
Yeah. No, this is so it hit a bottom, like the lowest of the low. I mean, since it went public, but the low was 1439. Man.
Yeah, they were up around in July. What was it, July? They were up around 40.
Yeah, they crossed 45.
Jeez,
June.
wow. Oof.
Yeah.
So what is it, just, I mean, this seems more than market fluctuation.
I mean, I think there's like some serious selling going on in these Chinese stocks, these Chinese tech stocks. I think there's probably quite a lot of funds selling. There's like, I mean, when I look at iQIYI and I just look at the volume, it's like pretty steady. It's nothing super huge, but it's been picking up, slowly. Just, it was roughly 500,000, and then it's gotten up to, I mean, 5 million. It's gone up to like 10 million last Friday. Yeah, it's taken a serious dive this last, like just this last week. It started the week, what was it? Let's see here. Started the week like 1780, and it ended 1494. So no, it's
Well, I think I mean
brutal.
the whole market did terrible last couple of weeks, but I do think what I wonder about and worry about with ITE is that when we talked about their cash burn is so high right now, in with investing all that into the content, and they do have a lot of competition from Bilibili, from even from ByteDance, because their competition is for eyeballs, right? So if their stock price keeps going down, then what are they what's they if their stock price keeps going down, they're going to lose their ability to raise money. If they lose their ability to raise money, they lose their ability to spend money. If they lose their ability to spend money, they don't have good content.
I mean, well, they raised debt, right? A convertible note, last time. And so they can they that option's still there. There are always ways to raise money. It's not always good for current shareholders. Like there's sometimes dilution, and sometimes pretty harsh terms. But yeah, I mean, I think iQIYI, it really is, it just comes down to can they get good content? And I don't know, man. Like, you look at media, the industry in China, it's a pretty tough industry. Like, there's not a small amount of regulation in that industry.
And people love watching other people do shit in China.
Yeah, and they're also, like the, I mean, they're competing with like the 10 second video, 30 second videos that are probably not being regulated
before. Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Right? I mean, iQIYI stuff's got to be checked, you know, all which ways and approved.
The live streaming, all that stuff. And then, all that content is competing either legally or illegally with the foreign stuff where they don't have. You know, House of Cards or the HBO stuff, you know, that's not being, obviously, you know, if you're going to, like, that might get edited if it's officially launched in China, like iQIYI does. But, you know, if you get it illegally, which a lot of people do still, you know, then, you know, you have to compete with that for the eyeballs. So, yeah tough for iQIYI. Anyways, let's move on. Alibaba.
So Alibaba, I mean, not necessarily Alibaba, but look, like a lot of these Chinese companies, we should probably do an episode on this in the future, just kind of how broad the networks are and interconnected everything is. But so Alibaba, I guess they were an investor in Ofo, and Ofo is going through some really tough times right now, potentially bankruptcy.
Yeah, they're done.
They're done.
Yeah. I don't see them coming back from this.
And I guess... their CEO rejected a merger with Didi Chuxing, right? And that would have maybe saved the company, but I mean, these shared bike companies, when they came out, I remember talking with some friends and being like, we're just trying to figure out their business model and how it makes sense. And like, it just didn't. We just could. We were like, wait, we were just not smart enough to figure this out.
No, it was a Ponzi scheme. Yeah. Especially like they were. That's why they can't get anybody their deposits back. You're supposed to be holding those deposits for
12 million people have requested their deposits back.
Jeez,
it's a big.
And the thing is, like, what do they put in for a deposit? 200, 300 RMB.
I think it's either 100 or 200. It's not much. So, yeah.
But you get these people, they're going to they're kind of picketing outside the office.
Yeah, I saw that. That was Tech
for,
Node
made for 100, what, 100 RMB? 15 bucks?
You're sort of like, come on, I deposited the money into this app. You made me do it. And so I could use the bikes. Now all the bikes are broken. Like you know how hard it is to find a working like Ofo bike right now. Like forget it. And supposedly they have a big problem, like they have a ton of bikes sitting in storage, and storage is not free, right? You have inventory, it costs money, and so they're spending on that, and they got, I guess, I'm gonna guess they have employees that haven't been paid, and I mean, I don't know that for sure, I'm just guessing, but anyway, so you have people wanting their money back from deposits, and they have bikes in storage. Those two together are significant cash requirements. Yeah. But the other news for Alibaba was Bilibili signed a deal with Taobao, and this will allow content creators that are on Bilibili to register accounts on Taobao, I guess through Bilibili, so it's connected, to promote their own products.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Isn't Bilibili Tencent invested?
Maybe. It is unusual to see the two networks cross, if that's true.
Yeah. So that's interesting.
But Taobao, anyways. I mean, Tencent doesn't really have an e-commerce. They have an agreement with JD, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're invested in JD. They have Pinduoduo.
Right.
Who, by the way, is there was an announcement they're cracking down on fakes on their platform, fake counterfeit goods.
That's right. Yeah. So there's an investor lawsuit that came out sort of after the IPO, that said that they were misled during the IPO roadshow. And this news is actually the Chinese regulators are putting pressure on Pinduoduo to get rid of the fakes. I mean, some of the fakes, I mean, have you seen some of these photos that go around on WeChat?
No.
I mean, they're like, it'll be like Xiaomi, but it'll be a TV, and it says Xiaomi, but it's spelt like slightly, like the last I is an L or something like that. It's just total ripoffs.
This is the kind of stuff that you'd get like 10 years ago in China.
Yeah, they still got it. I mean, maybe these are old photos. Yeah. Right? Don't trust everything you see on the internet.
Do you remember, you came to China around the time that I did, right? You've been 07, there since for like 10 years. Yeah. So, but you remember going to like Yasho or like Silk Street Market where they have, that fake stuff.
And they want you to pay. I guess that's it was funny because back then they'd want you to pay like the real amount. And you're like, this thing is a total piece of junk. You just use the same logo. Look, the seams are like falling apart. Like, you know, this thing. Yeah. So.
But you could find a deal or two at those places. Sure. You could get some Ariat stuff. Yeah. Anyways, cool. We got anything else we got to cover?
I think that's it. Nope, that's it.
All right, cool. All right, well, don't forget to rate us on iTunes. 5 stars, please, or give us a star on Overcast, or just whatever podcast app you use to download our wonderful content. Just please give us a good rating. Go to techno.com/newsletters and sign up for Techno newsletters because they're wonderful and they're great, and they go more into detail on China tech than any other English language news platform that I am familiar with. Thank you to John Artman, our producer extraordinaire, as always, and we'll catch you next time on the China Tech Investor Podcast.